and the solid helmet seemed an improvement over their light leather masks. Two more white-armored soldiers followed, and lastly came a droid. It was shaped vaguely like a human and made of matte black metal, and it took the longest to haul up, due most likely to its weight and its inability to climb. The people of Parnassos had seen the component parts of hundreds of droids and even used droid metal for their weapons, but no one living had seen a droid stand of its own volition and hold up an indignant hand as this black droid did when Baldur attempted to touch it. Now that all five figures stood on the plateau, Baldur turned to his people and motioned them to be quiet. The Skyr folk hunkered down to avoid detection in the crowd. The Dug looked older and tired, the flaps of his skin and ears sagging and dirty bandages swathing his arms and legs. The place where Phasma had sliced off his ear flap looked jagged and ugly, the wound going black around the edges. Phasma elbowed Siv, pointing at her handiwork, and they both shook with silent laughter.
"My people, let us sit so that we may listen to the newcomers," Baldur said.
The Skyr folk sat on the edges of the crowd, grateful to be lost among so many strangers avidly watching the show. There were perhaps 50 Skyr, but there were twice as many Claws, and they were so intent on the travelers that they didn't think to consider who might be lurking among them. The sun was punishing that day, and many of the Claw folk wore their masks, helping the Skyr warriors blend in. Baldur indicated that the leader of the new group should speak, and the man in black smoothed his red hair in annoyance before joining his hands behind his back. His legs spread as if he were more than accustomed to speaking to large groups and found the whole thing tiresome. The droid stood by his side, listening attentively, while the three soldiers flanked him, the slight twists of their helmets as they monitored the group suggesting they were more than ready for trouble. The soldiers held shiny white and black blasters in their hands and carried smaller blasters on their hips, and Phasma and the Skyr folks elbowed one another eagerly, anxious to find a way to claim some of the new bounty. The droid spoke to the man in black, and everyone gasped at the mechanized voice. It was hard to hear on the plateau, surrounded by whispering and the sudden gusts of wind, but the language seemed both familiar and different. The man in black spoke back to the droid, and the droid spoke again, this time much louder, its voice projected by some sort of strange machinery.
"My name is Brendel Hux, and I'm afraid my starship was shot down by an automated defense system over your world. My language is a little different from yours, so this droid will translate to your more primitive dialect."
The crowd gasped and whispered. Hearing their language spoken through the machine, if strangely, was very surprising. Baldur stepped up, shaking his head to make the rings in his ear flaps jingle.
"I am Baldur, leader of the Claw people. We rule this land, and your ship has fallen within our territory."
The man in black, Brendel, put on a tight smile and spoke through the droid again.
"I am glad for your aid, Baldur and the mighty Claw people. My emergency pod has landed very far from my ship. I have lost several of my own people in this horrible tragedy. But if you are willing to help me, I can offer you the kind of technology and supplies that your world has lost. If we can reach my fallen ship, I will give you weapons, food, medicines, and water. I will be able to call down a larger ship to bring even further riches."
"Why are you here, Brendel Hux?"
Baldur asked, stroking his chin with his foot. Phasma would have asked the same question. Nothing was free, and the riches Brendel Hux offered would not come cheaply. The droid translated Baldur's words for Brendel, and Brendel nodded as if this was a wise question and Baldur was a great leader. Phasma nudged Siv in the side and said, "This Brendel Hux is a clever man. I'd be clever too, with three warriors armed to the teeth at my side. With those blasters, they could kill everyone on this plateau in less than a minute if they wished. Then we must make them wish otherwise." Brendel spoke to the droid, and the droid said,
I come from a powerful band called the First Order that brings peace to the galaxy. I am tasked with scouring the stars for the greatest warriors, that they might join our cause. Our people are well cared for and well trained. Ask my soldiers here. Troopers, is that not so?
The three soldiers in white nodded and barked,
Yes, sir.
Each of these warriors was selected from a distant planet and trained to fight for the First Order. If your people help return us to our ship, I will take whoever wishes to join me back to our fleet. These soldiers will live in glory and wealth, never suffering for want again. Now who will help me?
The Claw people stood to cheer, but a new figure appeared beside Brendel Hux, a warrior wearing a fierce red mask. I am Phasma, and I am the greatest warrior of Parnassos. Removing her mask, Phasma faced Brendel and waited for the robot to translate. I will help you find your ship. In a heartbeat, Baldur had his toes wrapped in Phasma's jacket, and the warriors of the Skyre and the Claw were on their feet, jockeying for position around her.
We are at peace, little Skyre, Baldur hissed. And yet you trespass.
Would you have told us about your new wealth, Baldur? Have you already sent messengers to the Skyre, urging us to join you in this quest? Would you include your allies in your journey to the Fallen Star? Torben, Siv, Carr, and Gosta had their weapons drawn, and the fighters among Baldur's claws were likewise ready. Brendel Hux looked from Phasma to Baldur, but not as if he was worried. No, it was as if he were merely curious. Baldur growled.
I would have done so, little Skyre, but you have taken away that kindness with your lack of judgment. You have broken the treaty in coming here, and your lands will once again know our fury.
So you will not allow the warriors of the Skyre to accompany the Claws on this journey to the Fallen Star, where we might all benefit? Phasma asked, her voice even and her smile deceptively bland.
I do not reward oathbreakers, Baldur hissed.
And if I apologize to you on behalf of the Skyre and promise to uphold the treaty? Baldur considered her, his lips drawn back in a snarl.
Pledge us the Skyre's child as an apology for this trespass, and I will uphold the treaty.
Phasma's smile went thin and brittle, and although Torben put a hand on her shoulder in warning, she said, Then I agree. Let us work together toward peace for all. She took off her climbing glove and held out her hand, and Baldur reached with his foot to shake it, as such deals were struck on Parnassos. But when they leaned in to complete the gesture of goodwill, Phasma pulled him in closer and slid a small stone dagger into his chest. Baldur shuddered against her and fell. As soon as his body hit the ground, Torben picked him up and flung him off the plateau into the sand far below. Phasma and her warriors barely had time to spread apart and draw their own weapons before the Claw warriors attacked. Grab Brendel Hux and get him back to the Skyre! Phasma shouted to Torben, and the big man picked up Brendel like he was a bag of sand and strapped him on his back as easily as if the grown man were but a child like Frey. Brendel's soldiers aimed their guns at Phasma, but she shouted, Follow your leader! We'll get you to your ship! Baldur would have killed you all and taken your riches, but I and my people will go with you! As a fierce battle broke out, the stormtroopers must have done the math. Stay here and fight a bunch of strange primitives, or follow the huge man bounding away with their superior. They might have shot at Torben, but with Brendel strapped to his back and screaming at them not to shoot, they had little choice. Blasters drawn, they followed Torben, picking their way across the rock spires with careful steps. The battle raged in their wake. Phasma was truly in her element. Before, all the fights had been defensive, with a focus on repelling enemies from the land and saving the people who couldn't fight to save themselves. Now, with three of her chosen warriors by her side and eight more Skyre folk hand-picked and hand-trained for their proficiency with weapons and willingness to follow her orders, she could experience a true melee for the first time. The plateau was crowded, bodies clinging to one another as the claws panicked and sought safety. But they fled or fell before Phasma's axe and spear. Moving past the throng, Phasma aimed for the fighters, familiar masks and weapons she'd parried for years during raids, and on whom she could now finally let loose her anger and fierce joy in destruction. Phasma and her people fought around the perimeter of the Great Plateau, kicking the wounded and dead over the edge and into the sand to clear more room to fight. As Phasma had planned it, they fought their way back around the plateau until they were near the series of rock spires that would take them across the borderlands and back into Skyr territory. "Now!" Phasma called, and her people retreated across the rocks as Carr covered them, ready to pick off any followers with his throwing knives dipped in Phasma's poison. Soon the remaining Skyr warriors were moving fast back toward home. They'd lost only two people, and those not even worth naming. The claws had taken far more damage. Without Baldur to lead them, and more concerned with protecting their own property and their more fragile members, they'd taken greater casualties, and now several survivors stood at the edge, looking down to see who'd died and been tossed to the sands far below.
"You've broken the truce! This isn't over!"
called one of Baldur's lieutenants.
"Come find us when you want to die, then," Phasma called back over her shoulder, laughing.
She and her people hurried to catch up with Torben and help Brendel's soldiers learn to traverse the dangerous rocks of Parnassos. In Phasma's eyes, the raid was an unqualified success. She and her warriors had not only ended Baldur's reign and thrown the claws into disarray, but they'd also acquired Brendel Hux and his soldiers. Her gambit had worked, and Keldo would have to see that her strategy would usher in a grand future for the people of the Skyr. Nine. On the Absolution.
"That's not enough," Cardinal says, frowning.
"You asked how Brendel came to be on Parnassus, didn't you?"
"Yes, but this story isn't important. It's just more of the same."
Cardinal frowns.
"Phasma is great. Phasma is a liar. Phasma is dishonorable. Phasma might have lied a little, but it was for the greater good. The First Order doesn't care about any of it."
"But you should. She is the sum total of her stories, you know."
The droid beeps a question.
"Good point. How are you choosing the stories you tell? What's your angle?"
Vi gives a dry cough and waits for him to offer her a sip of water before she speaks again.
"I'm telling you all this because, like I said, I've been researching all the big names in the First Order and you're on the list. I can't find a single black mark in your records. I have file after file of proof that you're not a bad guy. You have your principles and you stick to them. You're a great soldier. You practice what you preach. The kids who graduate from your training program all but worship you. I can't even find a way to hate you, and I can still smell the burnt flesh from when you shocked me. So I figure this whole thing can go two ways. Either you use what I give you to take down Captain Phasma, or you realize who you're really working for and defect. Either way, I win."
Cardinal sits back and barks a laugh, looking at her like she's gone mad.
"You're a fool," he says, shaking his head. "All you've told me is what I already know. Captain Phasma is willing to do whatever it takes to bring her people glory. She did exactly what the First Order would have done in that situation, the thing no one else had the courage to do, the thing that would ensure prosperity for her people. Even I can't find fault with it, and I want to. No, you're going to have to give me something more if you want to get out of this alive. And if you want to keep your brother safe."
At the mention of Ba'ako, Vi bares her teeth at him.
"Ah, but that wasn't the end of the story," she hisses. "I haven't even gotten to the good part."
10. On Parnassos, 10 years ago. Phasma and her warriors had their work cut out for them on the way back to the Skyr. It was slow going. The whole way there, Phasma focused on better understanding Brendel's strange accent and peculiar vocabulary. With the translator droid gone, lost somehow in the skirmish, she was determined to communicate on her own terms. He was polite and helpful for the most part, but he did have to correct her frequently.
"Stop calling me Brendel Hux," he muttered. "So long as we're on this blasted planet, just call me Brendel."
"Your people have more than one name?" Phasma asked, fascinated. Brendel shrugged.
"Some do. Some go by numbers, like my soldiers."
"I don't think I'd want to be a number," Phasma said, turning to watch the three troopers.
"Depends on your priorities," Brendel snapped. "They consider it a worthwhile trade for a better life."
Phasma took it upon herself to help him traverse the terrain, and although he wasn't as nimble and strong as his warriors, between Torben's muscle and Phasma's patience, Brendel didn't slow them down too terribly. His soldiers, Siv reported, were well-trained, quick to improvise, and tirelessly devoted to their superior. Although she'd already pledged to help them find their ship, Phasma continued to store away information on these strangers from the stars, trying to better understand their ways and speech. The original journey had taken half a day, perhaps, to get to Baldur's territory, but it took longer to return. The warriors were tired, several had sustained minor injuries, and Brendel himself was neither agile nor quick and had little muscle mass. His life in the stars must have been an easy one, the warriors whispered among themselves. As they stopped on one of the last of the plateaus to rest and eat, Phasma monopolized Brendel's time, asking him question after question as she struggled to master the intricacies of his language. She wanted to know about his life, about the ships, about why the First Order needed warriors. She was especially interested in their training programs, as she'd watched the troopers in white armor fight during the battle with Baldur's claws and had found much to admire in their calm, their aim, their nerves, and the way they reflexively followed orders. Brendel seemed happy enough to talk, though his watery eyes darted everywhere, scanning the sky constantly as if rescuers might arrive unrequested at any moment. He spoke slowly as Phasma sorted out their language differences, but it was obvious he had no interest in learning about the Skyre folk and their speech patterns. All his questions were about the planet as a whole.
"But what happened here?"
he asked, waving an arm, his nose wrinkled up as if the air carried a bad smell.
"There's a powerful defense system, but nothing else. No cities, no signals."
"We don't know," Phasma told him. "Generations ago, we had technology, and perhaps your cities. But so much has been forgotten." She shrugged and chewed her dried meat. "All we can do is survive, and hope something will change."
"So you've never seen active vehicles in the sky? There's no corporate or governmental presence here?"
Phasma shook her head.
"There are only the Skyre and the Claws, and then the Wastelands. No one who has gone there has returned in many years." "Fascinating. None of this is recorded, you see. The planet is listed as uninhabited, but the rest of the files were wiped."
"What are files?"
Brendel ignored that.
"Tell me, Phasma, are there any other fighters in the area who share your prowess? Neighboring bands that might have worthy warriors like you?"
At that, Phasma gave a haughty chuckle.
"No, Brendel. My fighters are the best warriors here. Baldur was mighty, but I killed him. Perhaps his clan still has fighters, but there are no other bands. There were once when I was young, but they either died out or joined stronger bands. We lose ground every year as the sea rises. That is why we're anxious to leave with you."
"It's funny that your land is being swallowed,"
Brendel said.
"From the sky, we noted several other land masses that appeared far more habitable.
Grasslands and forests, perhaps.
Even a few large compounds that suggest some sort of civilization. But no one answered our distress call. What do you make of that?"
"I wish to see it myself from your ship. Are all the night stars planets like ours?"
"Some are. Most planets are significantly more advanced. But most planets don't have fighters as tough as we are.
Phasma looked around at her warband proudly.
How will we become warriors for your clan, Brendel?
Brendel went very stiff.
The First Order is not a clan, Phasma. It is a political and military organization.
These words, political and military, what do they mean?
She asked, although she gave a one-shouldered shrug, as if to imply that if they weren't part of the Skyr dialect, they couldn't possibly be important. Brendel considered her as if assessing her intelligence.
It means, in short, that the First Order seeks to rule those who cannot rule themselves, to establish stability and promote progress for all.
Phasma held out an arm, gesturing at the horizon.
And what would the First Order think of this place?
This place.
Brendel paused as he fought to chew a bit of dried meat.
Many parts of this planet could be useful if we could disable the defense system. It could be colonized and used for training and support, possibly even farming or mining. It's unfortunate that your people have been trapped in such an unwelcoming area. But as I've said, we can offer you something more than scratching away at the rock.
What about those who aren't warriors? Phasma asked. Perhaps they could be transported to these better parts that you've seen.
Perhaps,
Brendel said, but he quickly changed the subject back to Phasma's fighting. Siv made note that as Phasma spoke with Brendel, she matched her speech patterns to his. Her consonants became clipped, her vowels drew out longer, and in just a few hours she began to develop the stranger's accent. A natural mimic, although Siv had never heard the phrase. Most of the Skyr folk still had trouble understanding Brendel's accent and continued to focus on the most important aspect of Parnassian life, staying alive. Siv and her friends were constantly scanning the borderlands, waiting for the claw folk to appear and reclaim their prize. It wasn't long before they were on the move again, headed back into Skyr territory. Phasma went first with Torben and Brendel at her side, and the rest of her warriors helping Brendel's troops navigate the chasms in their armor. When the first sentry called out a greeting, Phasma and her warriors returned it with gusto, beating their weapons against their shoulders and howling their victory. The sentry did not reflect their triumph, but shared solemn news. Keldo and the rest of the Skyr folk were waiting for them in the Nautilus. It was considered a great omen that the strangers from the stars had fallen to Parnassos when the cave was revealed, and Keldo held court within, sitting on the ancestral throne of stone. A contingent of warriors guarded the cave's entrance. Phasma and Brendel passed them and entered side by side, trailed by the stormtroopers who were allowed to keep their weapons and treated as valued guests. Torben, Carr, Siv, and Gosta followed. Despite the formality of the meeting, it was a time of great excitement and hope, for no living Skyr had met someone from beyond the stars, someone who had survived the orbital defense system that usually reduced every encroaching ship to a pile of component parts. The great skylight shone down on Keldo's throne. He looked resplendent and solemn, wearing his full Skyr costume composed of bright fabrics and antique feathers carefully stored for great occasions of state. Across both his knees sat an antique staff made of golden metal, some ancient piece of mining equipment handed down from leader to leader among the Skyr, and hidden in the Nautilus with other treasures while the sea level was high. There was room beside him for Phasma, but this time he sat in the center of the throne, denying his sister her rightful place.
Brother, I bring gifts. First, for you.
Phasma's warriors knew not to pry, but they'd all been curious about the bundle in the pack on her back, which she hadn't possessed on the way to the Clawlands. Now she unwrapped it to reveal the unexpected. A leg. Siv recognized it as belonging to Brendel's missing translator droid.
With a few adjustments, you could stand on your own again.
Keldo took the leg from her, careful not to betray how hard it was for him to hold such a heavy device. He considered it from all angles before leaning it against his throne, his face a war of hope and rage. Siv understood perfectly. Yes, it was a gift, but it was also an insult. Perhaps even Phasma's way of saying, "I told you so," in front of the entire Skyre. Keldo had forbidden her from leaving, but he'd been unable to stop her, to follow her. He was, in that respect, incapable, and it made him furious.
"And what else did you bring me?"
he asked carefully.
"A visitor from beyond the sky," Phasma said. "This is Brendel Hux, and these are his soldiers. They call themselves Stormtroopers, and their clan is the First Order. Brendel commands many great ships waiting in the sky."
But Keldo did not smile. His fingers went white where they curled on the stone and around the staff.
"Sister, what of our treaty? Surely our ally, Balder of the Claw Clan, did not freely allow you to bring this Brendel Hux with you into the Skyre territories."
Phasma held her temper. She stood tall, still wearing her mask, and did not bend to her brother in any way.
"These people and their ships are more important than any treaty. If we can help him reach his fallen ship, Brendel Hux will contact his people, and they will give us food, water, supplies, medicines, and access to the many advancements our civilization has lost."
Keldo glared his dissatisfaction, his voice booming in the cave.
"Were these people found in the borderlands, then?"
"They were beyond Claw territory, in the unclaimed wastelands."
"And did Balder allow you safe passage?"
Phasma breathed out, making steam pour from her mask. When she spoke, her voice was harsh and low, almost animalistic.
"No, he did not. Balder demanded the child Frey for my insolence in crossing the border, so I took these people for the Skyre and killed Balder for his presumption. That foul Dug will trouble us no more."
The cave went silent, the Skyre folk caught between Phasma's fierce joy and Keldo's disappointment.
"And how many of our people died during this pointless skirmish?"
Phasma's voice was tight.
"2. And at least 12 claws. But the loss will be more than paid back. Brendel Hux will help us. Our children will be born and raised in safety among the stars, and our warriors will join the glory of the First Order and bring honor to our people."
Keldo sighed.
"These are a child's dreams, sister. Your actions have broken the peace between the bands, and your foolishness has lost precious lives."
"These are a warrior's dreams, brother, and they are real. Balder is dead, and the Claw Band has been defeated. We killed a dozen of his finest warriors and claimed this prize fairly. Brendel Hux is our greatest hope for the future. With his help, we can become the most powerful band on the planet and keep our people from going extinct. There are better lands beyond the sea, Brendel tells me. Lands where buildings still stand and the ground is solid and yields crops and fruits and beasts. He can take us there in his ship, relocate us and all our treasures to a safer place. This will be our reward for returning him to his people. He need only call them and they will appear."
Siv noted here that, to her knowledge, Brendel had not promised any such thing. But she would never dare to correct Phasma, especially not in public. Keldo held up a finger.
"If his people are so great, why do they not simply find him on their own? If their technology is like that which we lost, their ships should already be able to immobilize the orbital defense system and search the planet's surface for his lost ship. I have read the old manuals, Brendel Hux. Does your ship not have a homing device?"
Siv couldn't see Phasma's face, but she watched her leader's hands tense into fists. Even Siv hadn't known that Keldo had taught himself to read, although she had noted he had an old data pad among his belongings. He'd been keeping secrets of his own. Hearing Keldo's patronizing tone, Brendel spoke for himself, albeit slowly and as if talking to a child.
The orbital defense system may have destroyed my craft as well as any beacons that could contact my people independently. Even if they should come looking for us, we are far from the ship's crash site, and now even farther from our escape pod. It is of utmost urgency that I am returned to my fallen ship, so that my troops and I might repair the comm array and make direct contact with my superiors. Your sister is correct. An entire fleet of ships, millions of men strong, awaits my order.
Keldo sat still as stone on his throne, glaring at Phasma. He was livid, but he was hurt. Siv knew him well, and she had never known the siblings to fight. Everyone was on new ground, a rare thing in the Skyre. Phasma stepped forward, but he held out a hand as if commanding her to come no farther.
Brother, listen. This is for the best. My warriors and I will take Brendel Hux and his people to find this ship. I have seen the unclaimed wastelands beyond Baldur's territory, and it is like nothing we have seen before. Land as far as the eye can see, barren and covered with only sand. No rocks, no water. Without your leg, you will be unable to make this journey with the required speed, so I beg you, stay here where you will be more comfortable, and I will deliver glory to the Skyre when the goal has been achieved.
But sister, you brought me a new leg.
But brother, you must first learn to use it.
The inside of the Nautilus suddenly felt far too small, and the Skyre folk huddled together, confused by their leader's hostility and by the presence of strangers from space. They looked to Keldo and Phasma for answers, but all they found was tension. Somewhere, softly, Frey began to cry. When Keldo spoke again, his voice was unfriendly and cold, far from Phasma's warm, anxious pledge.
But sister, the ship is past Baldur's territory. Do you know whose territory that is, or how they fight upon their ground?
The Claws will have chosen a new leader by now, and they may even be planning a counterattack that would bring violence to our land.
We have lost several of our own warriors, and I see wounds among our remaining people already beginning to fester. It's simply too risky for you and your fine warriors to leave us here unguarded when you've upset the balance of peace.
But brother...
Phasma, hear me. People of the Skyre, hear me. Brendel Hux, hear me. I forbid any of my people from pursuing this quest. Brendel Hux and his people are welcome to stay here and join the Skyre, but the risk of leaving is simply too great. Our people have fought and died to protect this cave and this land. You may have destroyed our hard-won peace with our greatest enemy, Phasma, but I will not let you destroy the Skyre. A recovery mission is out of the question.
He slammed his staff on the ground, and the sound echoed throughout the now silent Nautilus, rippling down through all the hidden caves and out somewhere to the sea.
The Skyre has spoken.
Phasma said nothing. When the Skyre had spoken, there were no further arguments. Tonight, her brother had chosen to take on the formal mantle of rulership, denying her the place she'd earned at his side as his sword arm. As she well knew, there was no fighting among the people of the Skyre. Here, in the Nautilus, the gathered people were his to command. She nodded her acquiescence, turned on her heel, and strode off into the darkness. If only Keldo had understood his sister better. That night, while the Skyre folk slept in their hammocks among the rock spires, Phasma crept into the swiftly filling Nautilus cave and loaded several packs with the tribe's collected food, tools, and water, the carefully scavenged and hoarded stores they kept for emergencies. Perhaps she reasoned that the First Order would be more than happy to replenish everything she took. Perhaps she cared only about forging an alliance with Brendel. Whatever reason she gave herself, Phasma headed out into the night with her four closest warriors, Brendel Hux and his three troopers, leaving a crippled and defenseless tribe behind them. Eleven. On the Absolution.
You see what Phasma was doing, don't you? Vi asks.
Cardinal shrugs. Aligning herself with the stronger party while getting rid of her weaker brother's influence. But all of that is well in line with the First Order's ways. She was loyal to her people first, and when she didn't agree with her brother's decision, she did what she thought best. If he'd been her true superior, I would object. But as you've described it, they were equals. Therefore, she broke no covenant.
So you think she did the right thing?
Vi appreciates the care Cardinal puts into his answer. It's clear he's frustrated, but he's also willing to debate. It's a rare thing to meet someone willing to challenge their own prejudices, especially on a topic as important as this one is to Cardinal.
It doesn't matter if Phasma did the right thing. My loyalty is to the First Order and what happens within our ranks. Whatever happened before Phasma pledged her loyalty to us is not my business. I have no way of knowing the intricacies of their culture and leadership structure. What you've told me so far might be an interesting character study, but I need documented proof of Phasma's wrongdoing within the First Order. And you still haven't told me about how General Hux died.
I'm getting to it, Vi says. But I need a med pack. If I get much weaker, I won't be able to talk. And what about my personal needs? It's not easy to tell a tale when you're about to bust.
Cardinal leans in, shakes his head. Time for all that later. Tell me about Brendel.
Vi steals herself. Med pack first. I need to be fortified for this part.
She drops her head and grins wryly.
You're not going to like it.
Cardinal stands to check the readout on the panel by her head, the one tracking her vitals. Whatever he sees must confirm what she's been saying. The droid gives a reluctant beep, and Vi realizes she's begun to think of Iris as the friendlier of her interrogators.
Your personal needs are your own problem. I will bring a med pack and more food and water. Try anything and the deal is off. And remember, I know where your brother is.
And Iris is watching you. He puts on his helmet and goes to the door. Before it opens, Vi says one thing, carefully chosen to trouble him.
Tell me, Cardinal, do you remember when Phasma first came to the Finalizer?
12. On the Absolution. Cardinal steps into the hall, locks the door, and checks it again. This resistance spy must remain his dirty little secret, at least until he gets the information he needs from her. He checks the time and mutters a curse, vulgar slang from Jakku that would be frowned upon if there were anyone nearby to hear it. Captain Phasma and Armitage Hux will be on the Absolution for a meeting tomorrow, which means Cardinal doesn't have long to wring Phasma's secrets out of his prisoner. It feels good to think of her as Phasma rather than Captain Phasma. A dirty, ignorant, desperate, traitorous villain from a dying colony, willing to do anything to get off planet. Yes, that sounds like the Phasma he knows, or at least what he'd like to assume. He knows practically nothing about her, but everything Vi has said rings true. He's taken into consideration that the spy might be lying, but the stories are too specific, too easily matched with his rival. It's odd that he could hate Phasma with such intensity. On the surface, they have so much in common. Young, scrappy fighters snatched up by Brendel Hux and driven by the promise of a better life in a ship among the stars. Ha! Cardinal was Brendel's first and finest project. Phasma was a later addition, an afterthought, and one given unfair attention. As he marches toward the mess, Vi's final words ring in his head. Does he remember the day Phasma came to the Finalizer? Of course he does. How could he forget? That was the day he lost half of everything he'd fought for. With Brendel gone on a recruiting mission, Cardinal was left to steer the training program. It was a job he loved, and one for which he was uniquely qualified. Who else could soothe and inspire new recruits, as well as a man who had once stood in their heavy, ill-fitting boots? Ever since leaving Jakku with Brendel, Cardinal had either been in the program himself, or helping shape young minds into perfect soldiers for the First Order. Brendel's officers handled the programming, but Cardinal handled the actual physical instruction. Hand-to-hand combat, blaster practice, running simulations, testing their mettle again and again, and subtly shaping their young minds. He was the ideal leader. No one believed in the First Order like Cardinal did, having been lifted from crushing poverty and given a purpose, and he prided himself on helping each young orphan find inner strengths and tap into that resilient core within that would one day live to serve the First Order. He'd been training a battalion on the use of riot-control batons when the order came in from his comm.
Cardinal, report to meeting room 107 immediately on the orders of General Hux.
When such orders came, much like for the meeting tomorrow, there was no questioning them, no asking if he was being called in for commendation or reprimand. There was also no delay. He left Iris and the next most senior officer in charge of training, gave clear orders, and hurried down the corridors toward the familiar meeting room, anxious to learn what his superior wanted. Although he was formerly Brendel's personal guard and accompanied the man on all important errands of state, Cardinal was well aware that Brendel often made such recruitment trips, generally to scout a new planet for cadets with the right combination of disadvantage and strength. The galaxy was full of orphans who had grown up, as Cardinal had, alone and struggling on a hard planet. To such children, the First Order was the ideal savior. Even the unwilling cadets, those taken against their will but for their ultimate good, would learn to see it as such eventually. So perhaps Brendel had brought a new cadre of students for Cardinal to gently introduce to the wonders of clean water and regular food. That was the best-case scenario. But when Cardinal arrived in the meeting room, armor and helmet fully polished and posture straight, he found not the usual group of scruffy children or a data pad of new identification numbers, but a single tall figure at Brendel's side. He, for at the time Cardinal was sure it was a man, clearly wasn't a proper stormtrooper, but he wore white stormtrooper armor, ill-fitting and utterly filthy. Blood, muck, and scorch marks were everywhere. Under the armor, he was blasphemously wrapped in red fabric instead of the requisite black body glove, standing taller than Cardinal or Brendel and giving off an air of quiet menace. From the very beginning, Cardinal knew this new upstart would be trouble.
"Cardinal, this is Phasma," Brendel had said. "You will introduce her to the ship and to her duties. The training program has grown beyond our greatest hopes, and once her own training is complete, your current role will be split between the two of you. Cardinal will continue to handle the new and young recruits, while Phasma will eventually take over the teens and adults, especially in regard to combat and terrain simulations. Cardinal, I will be taking on a new personal guard. You have performed admirably, and I now wish you to focus on our expanding program and training Phasma in all our weapons. Be sure to get her up to speed on using data pads, tech, that sort of thing."
This introduction caught Cardinal entirely off guard. Not only was he not prepared for the tall intruder to be female, but he had also lost his highest honor as Brendel's guard, and half his training program. All that, and he was expected to train her, too. If anyone else had required such a task from him... But it was Brendel Hux.
"Has she been assigned a number, sir?"
he asked, hating the squeak of desperation in his voice. Brendel smiled that secret smile of his and chuckled.
"Oh, no. Like you, she is a special case. She will also require an armor fitting. I've already had her assigned a separate suite. We've had a long journey, so we will rest today.
You will begin training her tomorrow morning. And now I must go make sure our other new recruit starts out on the right foot. I have great expectations for these warriors of Parnassus.
Cardinal saluted, but Brendel was acting strangely. He'd been watching his mentor for years, ever since that first flight off Jakku, and he'd seen Brendel on good days and bad, under great stress and when gloating over a bureaucratic victory. Something was off with him today, something more than just his sun-reddened skin, but Cardinal couldn't say what. Perhaps the older man was simply exhausted from whatever had happened on Phasma's planet. Brendel left, and Cardinal felt like he'd lost something valuable and was being given a pathetic replacement. He turned to Phasma, determined to make the best of it. Because that was what Brendel and the First Order required, and if nothing else, Cardinal wanted to do his job and do it well.
"What planet did General Hux say you were from?"
he asked, opening the door and waiting for her to pass through.
"Parnassus,"
she said, her accent as clipped and flawless as Brendel's, but, Cardinal noted, nearly emotionless.
"I haven't heard of it."
She still hadn't gone through the door, so he added, "Off to you." Phasma shook her head.
"You go first. I don't know my way."
Cardinal had shrugged it off at the time. She was tired, had clearly been fighting, and was obviously from some war-torn backwater planet. Of course she wouldn't want to speak of it. So he nodded and led her from the room. Now, walking the halls of a different but identical Star Destroyer, his Absolution instead of what has become her Finalizer, Cardinal is forced to remember that Phasma never mentioned her home planet again, that she has always sidestepped any mention of her origins or previous training. Any digging, and she simply digs in harder with silence, or doubles down on her onslaught in what should be a friendly training exercise. No wonder Vi's past destinations struck a chord with him. Although he looked it up on the star charts and saw that it was labeled Destroyed, he's never heard the name Parnassus again, has he? Until today. As he enters the mess, Cardinal lets his concerns slough off his shoulders so he can stand tall. He moves among his soldiers, nods back to those who nod deferentially to him. Sure, he thinks of them as soldiers, but they're all under 16, aren't they? Ever since the division of training programs, Captain Cardinal's older recruits leave to complete their training on the Finalizer with Captain Phasma, while the younger cadets stay on the Absolution with him. Cardinal has no idea what happens to the older ones over there. Judging by the military victories celebrated on both ships, he suspects Phasma's methods continue to be exemplary. He knows his own are flawless. In line, he selects several water bottles and another protein pack, this one in a different flavor. Not that his prisoner will care for it, but he wants to keep her alive so she'll keep talking, which means she needs to eat. Iris confirmed that her stats weren't good, so Vi wasn't lying about that. Even though he's learned plenty from her stories so far, he feels certain that she's holding something back, drawing the story out for longer than is truly necessary. She knows something about Phasma, something that can help him. If he can just pry that intel out of the spy before Armitage and Phasma arrive, if he can obtain real, concrete proof, perhaps he can get rid of his rival once and for all. Not because she's better than him, and not because he's worried about friendly competition, but because the more he learns about Phasma, the more he believes that she's not the perfect soldier she appears to be. That there's something dangerous about her, something potentially threatening to the First Order. She's like a ball of rot in an otherwise edible protein pack, something that shouldn't be allowed to exist and that is controlled for, but that has somehow passed inspection. And it's all going to hinge on the story of Brendel Hux. Cardinal just knows it. And that's personal, too. When Phasma showed up, Cardinal was relieved of duty as Brendel's personal guard, and that distance prevented Cardinal from protecting Brendel when he needed it the most. Brendel had been just fine before Parnassus, and he was fine for a while after he returned. But then he grew more and more sickly and just died. Or so young Armitage Hux said in a particularly poignant speech before the entire crew of the Absolution. Brendel's true cause of death was never disclosed, and Cardinal's inquiries were ignored, as if he'd been just another nameless stormtrooper. His recruits looked so young in the mess, their helmets carefully placed on numbered shelves so they can eat. They wave to him cheerfully, and he waves back. Here, dining and drinking in groups of their own choosing, they are simply children, collected from some of the loneliest of the unclaimed territories of the galaxy. They come together to become great soldiers under Cardinal's watchful eye. Their hair and skin cover every possible shade from pale to dark. Their eyes range from ice blue to pitch black and every hue in between. Their buzzed scalps show sweat from training, and their laughter defies the misery of their origins and histories. They have risen from their own ashes. Cardinal feels a swell of pride. This is what the First Order is all about. Giving everyone equal opportunity to succeed, no matter how lowly their beginning or how far off their planet. There are no rich kids here lording it over the orphans. No lobbyists or interest groups or bribes. No one is starving or thirsty or dying of exposure. As far as Cardinal is concerned, anyone who opposes the obvious benefits of the First Order is a fool. And anyone who swears an oath to the First Order and betrays it will answer to Cardinal. He looks over the mess one last time before heading back into the hall. Cardinal should be going to sleep for a 4-hour shift now, but that's not going to happen. He is, however, required to attend his nightly morale session, which is mandatory and monitored by the officers upstairs. Slipping into his room, he takes his place before the screen and relaxes as he absorbs the message. When he was young, he found it a little terrifying, watching all the horrible things happening in the galaxy under New Republic rule, the chaos and tragedy caused by terrorists and rebels. But now it's relaxing, because he knows that the First Order will rise above to conquer all that oppose it. He's had a hand in training the troopers who will fight for stability, and he is confident in their prowess. When the session is completed, he stops by the barracks medbay, tells the droids he's feeling under the weather and can use some vitamin packs and stims. And he's Captain Cardinal, so they give him what he requests with no question. He takes a circuitous route back to the lower level room where the spy is waiting. And if she's smart, not trying anything stupid. She has to see by now that it's foolish to resist, both him and the power he represents. No one can fight the First Order and survive. And despite her obviously rebellious nature, there's something about her that he likes. It's a gamble, questioning her independently. This interrogation is his first instance of defiance within the First Order. Iris, at least, has covered his tracks. Anyone searching the logs will find an anomaly, as if the spy never existed or someone else botched the records. It's a bold play, and possibly a damning one. But for him, this is the last straw. He has one chance to remove the cancer that is Captain Phasma, and he's willing to bet his gambit will pay off. This spy, she knows how to end Phasma. Could the spy be playing him just to stay alive? Maybe. But Iris's programming was written to pick up on lies, which helps with the younger recruits. So far, Vi believes the story she's telling. He needs to try to trip her up and see how she reacts. But he'll also get more out of her if she believes he's sympathetic or naive, so he can't push her too far. It almost feels like a betrayal, showing empathy to a resistance spy. But what he's doing is in service to the First Order. If Phasma is a bad seed, it's up to him to help his superiors see, to excise her before something dangerous takes root. Somehow they've missed what he's seen all along. Perhaps if Brendel were alive, he would have caught on. It's a shame about Armitage. He's never liked Cardinal, and the younger Hux and Phasma are close. But Cardinal's going to change that. Or at least, that's what he tells himself. The turbo lift opens, and he steps into the dark hall, hating the loss of order and cleanliness that is omnipresent everywhere else on the Absolution. This lower level, well, they have their uses for it, clearly, but it doesn't represent the better parts of the First Order. Cardinal knows about this particular room only from witnessing several interrogations done by Brendel years ago, also in secret, and he doubts many others have ever seen it or know such places exist. Even the troopers assigned to cleaning duty don't have chores this deep in the gigantic Star Destroyer. He stands outside the room, supplies in hand, getting a handle on his emotions. He has to maintain control, but seem cheerful and sympathetic. He has to be threatening, but keep her happy, keep her talking. He can't lose his control and hurt her. Too much. And he has to get to the meat of the matter fast, before Armitage and Phasma arrive on the ship and start asking questions about where Cardinal has been. He needs evidence, actual physical evidence. No one would take a resistant spy's word against a proven warrior and captain of the First Order Guard, especially not the vaunted Captain Phasma. The irony does not escape him. Cardinal is breaking First Order rules to out Captain Phasma for breaking First Order rules. But he's not doing it for personal gain, not because he wants a promotion or a reward or power. He's doing it because she has the potential to destroy the thing he loves most, and she must be stopped. He has to get the answers he needs. Or else. Or else, he's a traitor, too. XIII. On the Absolution.
Oh, good,
Vi says, gummy eyes blinking open.
I'm not just dreaming.
Don't call it a dream until you've tasted the food,
Cardinal replies as he places his helmet on the table, but there's something about his forced jocularity that tells Vi he's not entirely genuine.
The vitamin packs are tough to swallow.
He helps her with the water, sticks her with the stems, forces the vitamins down, and squeezes yet more gray protein paste into her mouth as a chaser.
Almost tastes like chicken,
she says, struggling to swallow.
If you deconstructed a chicken and forced it through a hapabore. Now, when are you going to let me out of this fancy chair so I can eat with my own hands?
When you tell me what I need to know.
You already know what you need to know. Phasma is bad news.
He shakes his head, exasperated. Oh, of course. Let me just go to General Hux and pass that on.
Yes, sir. So it turns out that this resistance spy I'm hiding in the bilge said Phasma is a no-good nerf herder hot nugget.
For just a moment, what she thinks might be his original accent comes out, broad and rough. Then he returns to his best approximation of the clipped tones of the First Order.
They'd kick me out an airlock. This isn't a child's game of tattling. I need real, actual evidence of wrongdoing. And not the New Republic's specious idea of wrongdoing. It's got to be a clear violation of First Order law.
Like murdering Brendel Hux?
That gets his attention. He spins around to face her and the droid zooms excitedly to his side.
Yes, exactly like that. We're finally getting around to the important part. Do you have proof?
Vi leans her head back, grinning.
I can tell you where to find proof, although it's nearly a suicide run. But you've got to let me get there. It's all part of the story.
She chuckles.
All part of the legend. Doesn't that ever bother you?
What?
That it's like they chose her over you. Wanted to turn her into a myth. The little girl from nowhere who became the most lauded engine in the greatest war machine.
He turns away, and she knows she's got him on the hook.
It bothers me if she's not what she seems.
And didn't you ever wonder if it was all just a lie? If she's not really the shining, chrome-plated paragon on all your propaganda posters, that billowing cape flying behind her? Not the ideal soldier?
A pause.
That she might not actually believe in the First Order like you do?
Cardinal goes very still. He's facing away from her, but she can see the pain in every line of his body. His fingers briefly tug on his own armor-weave cape, identical to Phasma's, not that he's on any posters. All they see is her polished chrome. This barb of hers has hit him hard.
Of course it bothers me. Every day.
But you've done nothing about it. He turns to face her, teeth bared.
And what could I do? No one knows anything about her. Brendel is gone. I searched the records and found nothing of Parnassos. Nothing. Until you showed up today. I can't toss her suite looking for clues. She speaks to no one, has never confided in a single person.